Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like, if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him, too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jackson weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. Good to have you with us in the Dave in the City studios, from the Dave in the City studios in somber Southern California on this anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on America. We certainly have never forgotten and will continue to not forget the events of that day. And we appreciate the resilience of everyone who has been a part of that, the first responders, the police, the firefighters, and everyone who lent a helping hand. And the lives lost, I mean, you know, there's nothing that can really give them back, but we can certainly do our best to remember this moment and take things from there. So tonight on this show, we'll do our normal business. We're going to cover the football events of the week. We have the really exciting slate of games to recap. And joining us for the on-air festivities is John in Connecticut and Andy in Seattle. They will be joining us a little bit late because John's going to be joining a little later because I asked him to call a little late because we had some technical issues starting our show tonight. Andy is calling in late just due to other scenarios, and Ron will be sending his picks via the text, and the guest picks are to be determined. I think we may just go without guest picks this week due to finding someone in time. That's as best as I can put it. But we'll see what we can do. I mean, we've got a couple of days. We might be able to put some stuff up on didcow.com before the end of the week. So we'll update you through that at didcow on Twitter as far as those particulars. As for the regulars, we have our picks. And we also want to thank our guest picker from last week, Andrew Jacobson, for joining us. And we'll tell you how he did in just a moment. And as we prepare for the start of another week of action, you'll notice that the college football slate isn't really that exciting, but it is in those moments where the college football slate isn't that exciting that you never know where the juice may come from. And as a matter of fact, Vegas Insider has pointed out a couple games that could be big upset alerts over this coming weekend in college football. From the pros, some good matchups coming up, and we had a pretty good game on Monday night to kick off the Monday night football season. Very good game. And we'll tell you more about that game as we go later into the program. So all in all, a pretty good show for you guys tonight. Hopefully going to be a good load off of the shoulders for a moment as we broadcast on this day that otherwise has been, you know, a very sad day for us and our nation. But we're gonna do the best to entertain you the whole way anyhow, and we hope that you'll enjoy this program, you know, all the football scenarios in effect, and it's what we do, you know. Even in times of tragedy, we try to do our best not push it aside. That's not what we're doing, but we want to do our best to be, you know, continue to do what we do. And I think because if you don't do what you do, if you don't do the things you enjoy or the things that make your life go, then as they said before, the terrorists would have won. And we don't want that. So with that remembrance in the background and with our football in the forefront tonight, we will begin our program. And all the best to all of you. I just want to thank you all for your continued listenership of the show. We now have John joining us, and Andy will join us momentarily as well. So with that, we look back at a thrilling college football showdown, a battle of top 10 teams that I think for the most part lived up to the billing. And in the NFL, a couple other games that wound up being pretty good. And some came out of nowhere, and some were supposed to be good and wound up being nothing. I think week two in the NFL is going to give us a really good slate to match the excitement of week two in the college game a week ago. But our contest is also warming up as well, and we're ready to go for some more action. Let's hit it! Football picks, week three. And a little bit more from Tubble last week, but I think that of the regulars, it was Dave, me, that did the best, 2-1-1. Here's what happened with week two. The entire panel went with the Rams Carolina game, and half of us went head to head with the other half, and the game pushed. Can you believe it? So we have a lot of pushes this week here among our panel. So as I mentioned, I was 2-1-1. Andy is 1-1-2. John went 1-2-1, and Ron in New Jersey went 0-3-1 last week. So the guest picks from Andrew Jacobson went 3-1. And your standings after these 2 weeks, it is Dave at 4-1-1, Andy at 3-1-2, John at 2-3-1, and Ron at 1-4-1. The guest picks this season so far, 4-2. As far as this week's guest picks, that will be in limbo for now, but we'll update you as I mentioned. So let's get right to it. A recap of some pretty good college football action. We hope that you're doing all right. With your picks as well, and that's ultimately what the goal of our show is, to give you some good advice for what to select and what to gamble on and all the whole thing. So let's bring in John back on the program, and then we'll have Andy joining both of us in just a few moments. So, John, it certainly was fun in the college game and in the pros as well. A big win for your Packers. How's it going tonight?
Doing well, Dave. Thanks for having me back on. Yeah, it was an exciting week of action, and we're in full swing now. You know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you got football on the television. So life is certainly good from that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. It was certainly good from that perspective. It probably will be a quick show for us tonight, you know, because we'll get right into the meat of a lot of these things right away. I'll have some interesting games to pick your guys' brains about as we get into the end of each of the college and either the college or the NFL segment. A lot of news too. USC athletic director Lynn Swann resigned on Monday, effective immediately, which by all accounts means that he was forced out. That's very interesting news, John. Do you want to comment on that right away, really quickly before we get into the recap?
Dave, you're probably more equipped to speak to what the politics and whatnot are out there in Southern California. I mean, from an outsider's point of view, it just seemed like he was never the right fit, and that
right.
USC seems to always, get nostalgic or want to go with a former player or coach to lead the athletic program. And while that's a very novel concept, sometimes maybe the best candidate is the one that's not, has a USC connection.
Right.
We'll see where they are going forward. Like if they comes out 3 weeks from now that Jack Del Rio is your new athletic director. I mean, I don't know if that would be the best idea.
No.
another USC player or coach. See what happens. But I think the biggest news, Dave, from USC over the weekend is you have a quarterback now, at least for 1 week anyway. Caden Slovis just played great and destroyed the Stanford defense.
Yeah, we were talking about him a little bit, and it was a bad job out of me not doing my homework on that guy. But he's not the best recruit of the available remaining pool, he seems to have a really strong arm, and he played very well in the second half and even the first half of that game against Stanford. So tremendous job out of him, and the run game was good. Although I looked at the stats, they didn't actually run for that many yards, but. Stanford's defense looks pretty bad. Well, now we can get into the formal recap and all the scenarios. As for Lynn Swann, the reason he's out, I don't think has a lot to do with the actual sports. I think he was tied into that admission scandal, and I think that's why he was forced out. I mean, I think it has more to do with that. But I think all of us who root for USC Athletics are pretty happy about the outcome. So now let's get to the recap in earnest. And we'll welcome Andy to the program, too. How's it going, Andy?
Hey, guys. Just driving home, so doing the best I can to be in the mix. But, yeah, literally just left the office now, so we are tuned in, getting ready for a week three in the college and a week two in the NFL.
Yep. And you were in the car right now. That's good stuff. So let's do the recap now, and we'll start with John. A lot to talk about from college football in week two. Some exciting games. And how about Tennessee losing again to BYU? And there's so much to talk about. So, John, I'll give it to you for the recap.
Yeah, Andy missed a good chance there. He should have been like, yeah, first time, long time, Dave. You know, I got a point to make. But, yeah, so it was a pretty exciting weekend. I guess we'll start with the LSU-Texas game. I guess I'll admit I was completely wrong about Joe Burrow and this LSU offense. Did not expect them to do so well down there in Texas. I mean, that new system they have, I guess the coordinator came from the Saints. They're running that spread kind of offense, and it was really impressive, especially at the end of the game there where you thought that maybe Texas was going to get a stop and get the ball back, and they have that 3rd and 17 play where Burrow completes the pass. Guy breaks some tackles and he goes in for a touchdown. I mean, he ended up 31 of 39 for 470 yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, that was just a very impressive performance. And Texas threw all they could at him too, in terms of like a performance. I mean, that was a great game. And, you know, Texas certainly has nothing to be ashamed of. And depending on the line that you got, most people I would think pushed if you bet it kind of towards the end of the game, when the game was about to kick off. I mean, if you bet it earlier in the week, LSU probably did cover because it started off at like 5.5 or 6 earlier in the week. But towards the end of the week, it was like 6.5 or maybe even 7 in some spots. So ends up being a push, but just a great high-level game. And LSU, I mean, you're going to hear it now for the next 2 months, how they're going to be waiting to play Bama, and that'll be another game of the year scenario. At least LSU is playing quality opponents. I mean, Bama's just playing, their schedule is a complete joke. You know, playing New Mexico State and now Southern Miss coming up next week. They do have an SEC game against South Carolina, but the SEC East is down this year, so that should be a win for them. But so, yeah, that was a fantastic game. You had the Texas A&M Clemson game, really probably more low scoring than people would have thought. Trevor Lawrence didn't have a great game, but their defense dominated, and A&M got the garbage touchdown with literally no time left to get the cover. So that was a huge swing for some people in various scenarios. So Clemson, they do what they do, and you know that's probably going to be the closest game they'll have for a while as they head into ACC play. They're just head and shoulders above everybody else. I guess we'll mention the Army-Michigan game. I kind of got this one wrong when we talked about it last week. I thought, you know, after what Army had shown the first week versus Rice, that they would struggle and Michigan would be able to stop the option. And once Army gets behind, they're in trouble. That was the key to this game. Army did not get behind. They ran their option effectively, and they were able to keep the game pretty close and really could have won. I mean, they played for 3 at the end of the game, end of regulation, and just kind of butchered it. They really didn't take any chances down the field, and I get it. They're an option team, but you got to throw a pass or two there to get a little closer field goal. The kid missed a 50-something yarder, and then they end up losing in overtime. And Michigan, I mean, survive in advance. I mean, they're 2-0. They haven't looked that impressive, but as long as they're undefeated, they're still going to be in the mix for things. And it sets up a huge game next week. Michigan at Wisconsin, who's just looked dominant so far. Again, they're playing 2 garbage teams. I mean, South Florida is hideous. And Central Michigan, I mean, they beat them 61-0. And they're just horrible too. So you really haven't learned anything just yet about Wisconsin. And you know, but we'll see when they play Michigan next week. So I'm sure we'll talk about that game then. We mentioned the USC Stanford game. So that was a good win for USC. We'll see if Caden Slovis will play like this going forward. And he's the quarterback that USC hopes he can be as they go for a Pac-12 title. 2 other games in the top 25. I think we mentioned this one last week, Colorado over Nebraska. Nebraska was kind of fraudulent in their week 1 win over South Alabama and let Colorado come back in this one and get the win. And, you know, I think that the Nebraska hype before the season was not, you know, was not well-founded, as they're probably going to have like a 7-8 win kind of season. I don't see them winning like the division of the Big Ten at all. Their defense is kind of shoddy. And then the other game is Syracuse and Maryland, and this line kind of said it all. Maryland was like -2 or -3 by kickoff, and they just destroyed Maryland. Destroyed Syracuse. Tommy DeVito was horrible. Had some garbage yards. He just was not good. And their defense was even worse. Maryland got a good addition from Virginia Tech. The quarterback, Josh Jackson, transferred, and he's been great so far. So they're 2-0 and ranked now. And, you know, I criticized Mike Loxley before the season saying, would this work? Well, so far so good. And, you know, we'll see if they can keep it going. Always the letdown scenario after a game like that. And now they're playing at Temple this week. So if they can go win and cover at Temple this weekend, I'll kind of be more of a believer. But we'll see when that happens. Let's see. Any other games out of the top 25 that I want to mention? UCLA, another hideous performance against San Diego State. Granted, San Diego State has a good defense, but it's just not good with UCLA. Chip Kelly, I hate to say, he might be on the hot seat in year two. They are just awful. And then Florida State, almost losing in overtime to Louisiana Monroe, who for whatever reason, scored a touchdown to get within one in overtime. And instead of going for two, they kick the extra point and they miss. They lose by one in overtime. You're Louisiana Monroe. You go for two when you're on the road playing Florida State. So that was pretty bad. And then Davey mentioned Tennessee. I mean, what a disgraceful program that is. They give up a huge bomb on third and forever to BYU right before the regulation ends. That allows them to kick a field goal and go into overtime, and you knew they were going to lose into overtime. And losing overtime, it was just you know, bury the season already for them. They're done. I think that's pretty much all I wanted to mention for this. Oh, one more. How about North Carolina? Mack Brown, 2-0. I mean, who would have thought? And again, I think it's more his coordinators kind of running the show here because he just looks completely clueless on the sidelines. But, hey, they're doing a great job. And this freshman quarterback, they got Sam Howell, who they kind of stole away from Florida State. He's been terrific. So good for North Carolina. I think they're over or under this year, like 3 or 4, and they're probably going to pass it. So it definitely was an exciting weekend of action in college football.
Yeah, and you know one other game that I completely did not catch because of that big old weather delay? Cal went out and they upset Washington outright in Seattle. I didn't even know until I was like 2-3/4 of the way through Sunday, John. That was crazy. So, you know, that's a good segue to Andy. Andy, let's get your recap of last week's action.
Yeah, I mean, John basically nailed it. I was not lucky enough to have Texas +7. I had Texas +6.5. Tom Herman, if there's a lesson to be learned there, get the Ziggy off the board. And if you don't get the Ziggy off the board the first time, try to get the Ziggy off the board the second time. Because, man, that was bigly haunting for them in that first half. I also echo John's sentiments about Joe Burrow. The consensus going into this year was like, LSU's for real now. They've got a legit quarterback, Joe Burrow. I'm like, this is what we're doing here. Like, Joe Burrow's going to be the difference maker. So far, so good. They have an offense that is very unlike your traditional like SEC plotting, or very, very much unlike the traditional LSU style. So we'll see how far it takes them. Like John says, that Alabama game will be a big litmus test for them in a couple months. I also was tuned into that Clemson A&M game. Not the high up and down, high octane offense game that we saw last year. That A&M quarterback, Mondo, whatever his name is, he did not look good at all. But as John said, Jimbo Fisher was frantically trying, pulling everything out of the playbook to get that backdoor cover. So if you had Clemson +16.5, you got lucky. Or Texas A&M +16.5, you got lucky there at the end. I was kind of shocked at the Stanford performance late night against USC. Usually Stanford's able to kind of keep that USC offense in check, and their classic David Shaw discipline, execute, don't beat up yourself mantra is usually like kryptonite for a Todd Helton type team. Wasn't the case. I didn't pay attention too much to the game. I was at a bar watching the UW delay and some other stuff was going on. But we did have Stanford, and we're very surprised to see the outcome of that game. Another game kind of in the Shern category. How about Army playing Michigan really tight? I think Army might be kind of like a podcast family team we're going to keep an eye on this year. They had a good team last year. That coach is kind of, I don't know, he kind of looks like a 50-year-old version of our friend Captain from the board, both from an appearance and like his like mannerism, very, very intense. And yeah, the thing about Michigan is, yeah, they're not going to, you just saw the lines. Like, I don't know if Michigan is, the way they play offense, it's not conducive to a minus 22 point line. So I was like, let's take a chance with Army and see what happens. And it worked out. Now, I was on the wrong end of the stick with that Syracuse-Maryland game. I like Dino, and I usually do subscribe to the theory that that John likes to play. If you're a unranked team at home and hosting the ranked team and you're giving points, that's usually a telltale sign to take the unranked team. But I'm anti-Maryland because I'm not a big fan of the Hayden in Virginia caller on the Mad Dog Russo program. He's obnoxious as all can be. And he's just like, he waves the Maryland pom-poms every phone call he makes. And I was like, I'm gonna ride the Syracuse train. I was watching too much game day in the morning. And they're like, well, Syracuse needs this game to kind of make the game day experience against Clemson have a little more meat to the bone, but obviously it didn't work out. They just got embarrassed. I saw the score 42-13 at halftime. Like, what the heck happened? And then, yeah, that UW-Cal game, that was a comedy of errors. I was fortunate to have Cal plus 14. I'm not a Chris Peterson fan. The delay was crazy. A lot of people were like, are they even going to pick up the game? Like, yeah, of course they're going to. Like, I don't see how they, like, could have, like, suspended it to another time just with logistics and everything. So they basically they played, like, the first 6 minutes of the game, and there was about a three-hour delay, and they started and resumed the game literally around, like, quarter of 11 West Coast time, ended around 1:30. And it was just, you know, just time and time again, Pac-12 going to just shoot themselves in the foot, call yourself a dark horse contender, and then you lose at home when you're favored by 14 points. Now we have sensitive, insecure UW fans complaining that they shouldn't have continued the game. They should have just rescheduled it because it was like a neutral site for them. They lost their home field advantage and just like excuse after excuse after excuse. It didn't bother Cal. Didn't bother Cal. You're favored by 14. You should. I don't care if you're playing at Husky Stadium or at a farm. Do your job. So, as someone that was wearing the black hat with relish towards UW this week, I was. I didn't mind it. And then I tried finding Facebook Live on my phone. Had trouble. So I don't know if you can only get that Facebook Live on your desktop, but Hawaii, Oregon State was supposedly on Facebook Live. I couldn't find it on my phone, but Hawaii didn't cover, but they did win outright. And I know Hawaii is going to be a podcast family favorite this year, too. So they're 2-0 against Pac-12 schools this year. And their next game, I don't think they're going to win. They're playing at UW. Unfortunately, I think UW will win. They're favored by 21. But, you know, Hawaii has had a good start to the year so far, so we'll pay attention to them for giggles.
Love it. All right, good stuff from on the recaps, guys. I think the Maryland game was the most surprising one for me. You know, and I think the second most would have been the Army game. But not really, Andy. I think you're right. I mean, Michigan doesn't really have that much that great on offense anyway. So it's like, yeah, like how are they going to beat them by 22 points? And Army grinds out possessions. I thought Monken did a tremendous job coaching that game. They really deserved a win. That may have been the least deserving win of the year, of the week, Michigan winning that game. I mean, they just pulled that one out of their ass. That was, I mean, that is just, I think they're going to give one back just because of that. I mean, so we'll see about it. So now, let's go to the picks. And I think I'll do mine first because of how I finished. But more than that, I think... I want to get this out of the way so that we can set the rest of you guys up. So here we go. I'm going to give you my picks. Here we go. And this is kind of continuing the theme of offenses that really aren't that good getting favored by a ton of points. And so game number one, we're going to go with New Mexico getting 34.5 at Notre Dame. When was the last time that Notre Dame scored 50 points? It's like, for that to happen, New Mexico would have to get shut out. So I would be really surprised if they ended up getting beat by more than that in this game. And I think Notre Dame's a good team. I just don't think that they're the kind of team that can score, you know, 60 points the way like Oklahoma could. So we're going to go New Mexico plus 34.5. Game number two, we're going to... I think this is a product of overreaction on both ends. Although Clemson didn't play great. You know, like John broke down. I mean, they didn't cover the spread. Syracuse just looked embarrassing on over the weekend in Maryland, but this time they're going to be at the Dome, and so I think that Tommy DeVito will play better this time around. The reason why I think Syracuse lost is two things. Number one, I forgot how bad their defense was. Their defense is still hideous. It's terrible. And DeVito was just too much with the turnovers. Too many turnovers. So if they clean it up, I think it's going to be a much closer game, and Syracuse did beat Clemson a couple years ago at the Dome, so we will go Syracuse plus 28, although it doesn't seem like a good bet at the moment. But come Saturday night, you know, right around 10:30 Eastern time, it could be pretty clever. We'll see. So those two are my picks. A couple bonus picks for you from college. I like Wake Forest minus 3 against North Carolina on Friday. The Mac Brown scenario is going well, but I you got to think that the Wake Forest coach is so much better and smarter. So I'm going to go with that. I might go with the over in that game, but definitely the point spread. And we don't do over-unders officially on this show, but, man, Stanford UCF over 59. Oh, my goodness. I think the over-under is now 61. Oh, I love that. I love that over. I love it a lot. So there it is. Week number three picks, New Mexico plus 34.5 and Syracuse plus 28. And one more thing I'm going to mention, because Oklahoma is at UCLA after UCLA lost to San Diego State. They're giving UCLA is getting 23.5 at home against Oklahoma. If Oklahoma loses that game outright, I will attend every UCLA home game the rest of the season. There is no way they lose that game. UCLA is absolutely useless. So watch for that score later on in the weekend. So Andy, I now will give it to you for your week three picks when you are ready.
Thanks, Dave. Well, yeah, speaking about that UCLA-Oklahoma game, I saw 23, but I'll do 23.5 because it's your show. I'm not telling you how to do your show.
Well, let me double check that. Let's just make sure of that because I if it's 23 right now, I think we'll go with 23. You know what I mean? So let me check. Give me a second. It's 23. Okay, it's 23. So yeah, we'll go with 23.
All right. So I'm gonna take Oklahoma. I know 2 weeks ago, in a similar type of spread, I took Houston, but that was based on Houston having a very prolific quarterback and a very good set of receivers. And I know Oklahoma's defense is pretty spotty. However, in this instance, UCLA might have a talented quarterback, but he is not surrounded with any talented receivers. And they've just looked like absolute garbage in back-to-back weeks against Cincinnati and San Diego State, respectively. Something's rotten in Pasadena. And, I think Oklahoma is just going to just play pitch and catch for at least the first half, and then we'll see what happens in the second half. But, it's a lot of points, and He very well might be hanging on for dear life for the back door, but just looking at the results, I just don't think UCLA has much to offer in terms of an offense. So, yeah, that's just my reasoning. Give me Oklahoma, give me 23 on the road against a very hapless so far UCLA program. Game number two, we're going to fade Florida State, and we're going to take Virginia, and I believe the line is 7 points. And the other reason why we are on board with this pick is during the preview podcast that you guys had about a month ago, I heard very high marks on this Virginia team led by Bronco Mendenhall. And I know week one, we were fortunate to take them against Pitt. And I don't know what they did last week, but I do know Florida State have looked like absolute fools 2 weeks in a row. And that Willie Taggart, man, he might not be lasting much longer. I'm sure the alumni there is up to the wit's end with him, especially after that opening game against Boise State, where they basically got outscored 30-0 from the middle of the second quarter to the conclusion of the game. So I think FSU, they just can't get out of their own way. Seems like this UVA team might be on the up and up. So basically two teams trending in complete opposite directions. I will take Virginia at home, laying the 7 against a hapless clown town Florida State squad. So to compliment the Oklahoma minus 23 pick against UCLA for week 3 in the college pigskin.
All right. Thanks for the picks, Andy. Good luck. I like the call in Virginia. You guys are right about Virginia. So far, so good. So let's go to John and let's get your picks, John.
All right. Thanks, Dave. We'll start off here with a Pac-12 Big Ten matchup. And I'm going to take Michigan State minus 14 at home against Herm Edwards and Arizona State. Unfortunately, this line was 13.5 yesterday. I did make a wager when it was at 13.5, but for podcast purposes, it is 14 right now. So we'll stick with it. This is number one. It's a revenge game. If you remember last year, Michigan State went out to Tempe and lost to Herm Edwards and Arizona State by a field goal. So that's number one. Number two, we mentioned in the preview show, Arizona State lost all their playmakers basically from last year. Manny Wilkins graduated. N'Keal Harry got drafted by the Patriots in the first round. So they do have a good running back. Eno Benjamin's probably one of the better running backs in the Pac-12, and they have a good offensive line. However, their quarterback is really young, and they've just struggled to score in the first two games. They were only up like 6-0 against Sacramento State the other night at halftime, and they went on to win like 19-7 or something like that. They've just struggled to score. The first game was the same kind of thing against Kent State. They only won 30-7, 28-7, something like that. So it's been a struggle, and now they're traveling for their first road game to Michigan State, and I just don't see them scoring maybe more than 10 points in this game. And you know, the Michigan State offense isn't great. They've had their struggles. They looked a little bit better so far this year. They rolled up 50 points on Western Michigan last week. So I think they're going to be able to do what they want here. I see this as like a 28-10 kind of game, 28-7 kind of game. I just don't see Arizona State scoring much at all on that Michigan State defense. And I could see Herm just getting really conservative, and especially with the revenge factor in the mix too for Michigan State. I'll gladly lay the 2 touchdowns. So give me Michigan State minus 14 for game one. And then game two, I'm going to take Louisville minus 10 against Western Kentucky. Now, this game is not being played in either team's home stadium. It's a neutral site game at LP Field. That's in Nashville, Tennessee, where the Titans play. But I think this Louisville team is a team that the odds makers haven't caught up to yet, how improved they are, just because of the coaching situation being upgraded. And we saw that week one against Notre Dame when they thoroughly were in the game until the fourth quarter. And they changed their offense. The players look so much more engaged and looks like they want to be out there and playing. And you can just tell they just quit on Bobby Petrino last year. So now with Satterfield, who came over from App State, You can tell they're turning things around. They played an FCS opponent last week and handled them pretty easily. But you're only giving 10 here, and I think it's kind of low. I think if this game was being played at the end of the year, it might be like 17. Western Kentucky is not good. Despite their win against Florida International last week, who we may have miscalculated, their team, they looked horrible so far. Western Kentucky lost to Central Arkansas, who was an FCS team week one. So I think you're getting some good value on this line. A Louisville team that those odds makers really haven't caught up to yet. So we'll go Louisville minus 10 against Western Kentucky, in addition to Michigan State minus 14, the college picks for week number three.
Okay, thanks, John. Let's now go to Ron in New Jersey's picks, and he sends them via the text. Here we go. To start, he will go with Ohio State minus 16 at Indiana for game number one. And for game number two, he's going to go Washington minus 6.5, trying to come off of that bad loss against Cal. They will go to Houston, and he believes they will cover the 6.5. So to repeat for Ron, Ohio State minus 16 and Washington minus 6.5 for college football week three. All right. Now,
Dave, your Washington State is playing Houston. Washington's playing Hawaii. So
okay. Whoops. All right. Thank you. So that's actually Washington State, folks. You're right. That's right. I see it on the chart, too, so my fault. Oh, all right. Because I would have been surprised. Yeah, it's probably a better bet for Ron than if he had picked Washington to do the same thing. So my bad, guys. All right, let's go look at some of these games of the week. There really isn't a major game of the week, but there are two. John highlighted one, Michigan at Wisconsin. And the other one is Iowa State. And that's a game that College Game Day is going to in the morning. So that sounds like a pretty big game, a big rivalry game, and it should be a fun game. We've all been pretty high on Iowa State in recent years, and even Iowa's not that bad. So that's what we're looking at. I will mention one other game before I give it to the guys for previews. BYU against USC, both of them are coming off of pretty big wins. So there's going to be a letdown factor for somebody. I just don't know who. But the one thing about BYU that I noticed in the first two games, they are giving up rushing yards to everybody. They gave up a ton to Utah. It was like 245. And I think they gave up – no, I think they gave 265 to Utah and 245 to Tennessee in the game that they eventually won. So they're giving up a lot of rushing yards. And if USC emphasizes the run, I feel like USC can win that game even though it's on the road. So it feels like they can take it. But obviously not enough. I don't feel that confident in it to make it a podcast pick. So let's go back to Andy and get your previews of some of the games coming up this week.
I don't really have much to say, to be honest. I'll probably just kind of pivot here. If Michigan, Wisconsin is the marquee game of this week, holy smokes, that's going to put me to sleep. I know Twitter and Twitter, like Stuart Mandel and some of these other like college football scribes were kind of mocking this slate this week, and for valid reasons. You know, that Iowa State-Iowa game, I mean, yeah, it's got some juice, but I'm still a little bitter about Iowa State from that bowl game last year against Washington State when I believe the Iowa State coach, who's an immensely talented guy, I think he brain circuited a couple times. I think he like used like two of his challenges in the span of like 4 minutes, and they weren't really. You could just tell like by the naked eye, like what is he doing challenging these things? And I don't know. Yes, I'm still bitter because I had Iowa State in that game, but yeah. Anyway, and then in that first game this year, they barely beat. I think it was like Northern Iowa or something like that. But I guess if I did have to handicap that game, I'll take the talented Iowa State coach over, you know, the Kirk Ferentz. I mean, that Iowa program is just, you want to define stale poo? I mean, that's Iowa in a nutshell. I mean, they have not adapted anything over the years. Like that, you watch game film from 2019 Iowa versus like 2001 Iowa, it's probably the same thing. Like, so, but I mean, that's the Big Ten in a nutshell. So kudos to that. I will actually be in to the coup versus coup, Washington State versus Houston game on Friday. I think that game could have a lot of potential to be entertaining. You know, two programs that basically are all about the offense. So I'll be into that game. That game has potential. John mentioned Alabama, South Carolina. That's the prime time or the premier CBS game. 25 points, Alabama. That's a crockpot game. I mean, no, thank you. That's not must watch. And then your BYU USC is going to be on at some point. I think the late night games. Yeah, you guys mentioned Michigan State, Arizona State. And then I think Texas Tech, Arizona. So yeah, it's kind of a lean slate of games, but come 8 a.m. on Saturday, we'll be sure to try to find a dozen games to gamble on. But in terms of games that are going to have like landscape shifting impact, I don't think there'll be that many. I think it's just going to be kind of like a degenerate special, like, oh, let's watch Memphis versus whoever Memphis is playing, just stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now this is the first week that where we haven't had a matchup between two top 25 teams in like 2 years. So it's a very lean schedule. But Ron's always told us that sometimes you get some surprises out of it. But on paper, not really, right? So let's go to John and let's get your thoughts on any of the other games on the schedule.
Yeah, Michigan, Wisconsin next weekend. So that's also the same day as Notre Dame, Georgia. So that'll be fun, and I'll be in Las Vegas for that Saturday. So
hey, you know what? There might be someone joining you, McGraw.
Nice. All right. Well, that'll be fun. Don't mush my bet.
No, I won't. I will not.
Well, we'll try. We'll try not to. But yeah. Okay. Cool. This is gonna be a slow weekend, but I saw something on ESPN or one of the shows yesterday that said the last time there wasn't a weekend without a top 25 matchup was some weekend in October a couple of years ago, and you had five top 25 teams lose. So you never know. It could end up being a crazy weekend, but on paper, the matchups aren't that great. I agree with Andy about the game on Friday night, Washington State and Houston. That could be a lot of fun. Two kind of interesting coaches running their offenses with Holgorsen and Leach, and they know each other from their days. Holgorsen was an assistant, in the Big 12 for a long time, and then obviously coaching at West Virginia. So, that should be a fun game. The Iowa State Iowa game, that's where game day is, and good for them getting to Iowa State. I mean, this would be probably the only week of the year they would do it. So good for them, and yeah, that should be at least a hard hitting, close game. You wouldn't expect a blowout there between those two. They always play close games, no matter skill level of the teams, and especially this year, both teams are solid. And I would agree. I would probably go with the home dog there, Iowa State. USC, BYU. You guys mentioned, BYU. They have a tough schedule for an independent. I mean, they played in terms of like the conferences anyway. Playing Utah, then Tennessee, USC this week, and I think I saw they play Washington next week. So that's a tough schedule for an independent. Fans of other independents like myself can only hope for that going forward. And at Stanford, UCF, that's just a tough spot for Stanford because they just played USC. Now they're flying pretty much probably almost the longest flight possible to go down to Orlando to play UCF. And then they're playing a Pac-12 game next week. So it's like your typical sandwich game. Honestly, I don't think Stanford's probably going to show up in this one. I think UCF will probably win easy because, Stanford's really not going to care about this game. They're going to be more focused on their Pac-12 game next week. I believe they're playing Oregon. I'll have to check on that. But in any event, I know they play a Pac-12 game next week. So it's your sandwich game, huge amount of travel, and I could just see them just not showing up against UCF. So all the UCF fans will be able to pound their chests about beating a Pac-12 team probably this time next week. The primetime game on ABC is Clemson-Syracuse. I kind of agree with your thinking, Dave, that like Syracuse isn't going to be that bad, and they'll have some pride and maybe keep this one a little close, like within the spread, maybe like 21 or 24, but I don't know if I can put some units on it. But, yeah, for that to be the ABC game, it's kind of rough. And yeah, the nightcap of Texas Tech and Arizona, it kind of is just like the Washington State-Houston game. Lots of points you would expect in this game if both offenses are kind of up to their potential. We'll see if Kevin Sumlin can get – and they played an FCS team last week, so that really doesn't matter. But we'll see if he's gotten things figured out since that Hawaii game. So that's kind of a fun game to end the night. Other than that, I mean, like Andy said, you know, we'll be there Saturday at you know, 11:59 trying to get an angle on, you know, Temple and Maryland and, you know, Eastern Michigan, Illinois. You might be into that one. So, you know, the degenerates will certainly have some action. But in terms of a national landscape shaping kind of weekend, I don't think this will be one of those.
All right, guys. Well, with that, we go into the NFL. Now, some good games over the last weekend as we kicked off the season. It's just that I'm thrown off because I forget that you have a Thursday game, you got a Saturday game, you got a Sunday, you got Sunday games, you got the Monday game. So when you put it all together, it's like, yeah, there was a lot. That's a lot. That's like 5 days of NFL. So let's go to the recap, and we'll start with Andy.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Where do we start? I guess we'll start with the Thursday night game. I know John can embellish that a little better. He knows the Packers inside and out. But this is just more of a quick rant on Nagy and Trubisky. All these fucking clowns that were ready to anoint Trubisky and taking the next step. But based on what? Last year, the Bears were really good. They had a great record, but I'm guessing their schedule was kind of soft based on 2 years ago. And they were just, that defense just, you know, created all sorts of turnovers, giving this Bears average at best offense, you know, short field time and time and time again. And, you know, sometimes these defenses, you know, where they create the turnovers, it can't always be deep in the other team's territory. Things are going to average out. So this year, harder schedule. Maybe the defense doesn't create loaf, you know, from the other team's 10-yard line, and the Bears' offense is actually going to have to create opportunities for themselves. And Trubisky is not your guy. I remember, I think Green Bay must have dropped a couple interceptions. I remember when I watched Trubisky against Seattle last year, you know, Seattle dropped a handful of interceptions too. So he just kind of reminds me of, like a Tannehill-type quarterback. He's just not that good. And that coach is kind of a dunce. I heard Mad Dog last week said he reminds him of Mickey Callaway. Just looks clueless out there. And I kind of agree with that. So, you know, let's put the brakes on the Bears bandwagon for a little bit. Speaking of bandwagons that could use some brakes, how about the Browns? How about those Browns? You know, all these analytic geeks that think they're going to win a bunch of games. Do they take penalties into account? You had 18 penalties, not 10 penalties, not a dozen penalties, not 15 penalties, 18 penalties. That's a testament of the head coach. And that Freddie Kitchens guy, I mean, that he might be in the Ooga Booga category soon enough. I mean, Freddie Kitchens, really? That's the next Sean McVay? I know it's a copycat league and everyone's looking for the next Sean McVay, but Freddie Kitchens is not Sean McVay. And so that game was, right there for them. I watched way too much of that game. And, you know, Tennessee was just letting Cleveland hang around. You know, oh, look at the TV. There's Mariota overthrowing another ball. And then Cleveland just completely self-destructed. I think Mayfield, all his picks might have been in the fourth quarter. It was just a disaster. And, you know, now all of a sudden this Jet-Brown game could be a loser leaves town type of narrative next Monday. I'll be into that. So that Jet game, I know a lot of the Jet fans are disappointing because their best defensive player got hurt. That's the only reason why they lost. But I'm sorry, you're up 16-0 in the fourth quarter or the late in the third quarter. You have to put that game away. You have to put that game away. Mr. Darno, you got to get a couple first downs on that last drive before you give it up. And, you know, they let Allen throw a touchdown on third down. just a disappointing game for the vaunted Jets. That Lions-Cardinals game was just a was kind of like clown versus clown between Patricia and Kingsbury. Kingsbury basically in his press conference after the game was like, yeah, I didn't really know what to do in the first half. I made things too complicated. Like, this really, this is your take after a whole, after your training camp and preseason, you overcomplicate things. Come on, man. It's like both teams were elated to tie. Not a good look. I'll talk about the Steelers in a little bit when we do some games later, but just the overall feel of just like a lot of sloppy play. The Rams impressed me. The Rams looked good. Even Ass Clown versus Texans. I mean, that's basically like, you know, Dimbold versus Dimbold between O'Brien and Peyton. I mean, it made for a very entertaining last, 6 minutes of the ball game, but you can make an argument that neither team deserved to win just based on, you know, some of the decisions made and the sequence of events, how it all played out. But all in all, you know, the pretty fun week one. Yeah, that's about it. You know, the Monday night second game always has a weird feel to it because it's an alternate play-by-play crew, and it's always like, you know, AFC West or NFC West. And I think the Raiders are going to be putrid, but at least for one game this season, they were able to play hard. And, you know, it's always like, you want to take Joe Flacco on the road? Mm-mm, not really. So we got lucky, took the Raiders. I think Josh Jacobs is going to be really good for him. But, yeah, they I don't know. I don't really know about the Raiders, and I'm not really too sure about the Broncos either. Like, there's one game this week that I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. It would be Broncos-Bears. I mean, geez, blindfold and make a pick there. But, yeah, that's my ramble for week one.
All right. Thanks for the recap there, Andy. And yeah, I'll just speak on behalf of everybody else. The Steelers were absolute garbage on Sunday. Wasn't even a game. 33-3. Pretty embarrassing when you think about all the drum up, and then now everybody's got good feelings because Antonio Brown's not their problem anymore, and Le'Veon Bell's not their problem anymore. And I still think these things. I'm sure everybody else does too, but that was embarrassing. That's a terrible loss, and Brown didn't even play yet. Brown was still on the Raiders at that point of the season. So Brown has been released by Oakland. He signs with the New England Patriots. The Patriots already look pretty good, even without him. So quite an interesting wrinkle for the Pats as we go into week two. Pats are going to be at the Dolphins. We'll talk about a little bit more about that later. But first, let's go back to John and get your recap of week one in the NFL.
Yeah, we got it off to a good start on Thursday night. I told you before the season that the Packers' defense would be better. I didn't think it would be that good, and that was partly a product of that. Trubisky is terrible. Andy is right. They could have had four interceptions. They dropped one. I believe it was Kevin King dropped one right in the middle of the field that was just completely underthrown and should have been picked off. But, they got their pick when they needed it in the end zone. Adrian Amos, how fitting. He picks off the former quarterback as he played for the Bears last year. So he kind of probably knew that play was coming, but they just got tremendous pressure on the quarterback, the two Smiths, Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith. Tremendous pressure, and that really is what the team was missing over the past few years is a pass rush. So Clay Matthews can, twirl his hair and do commercials for the Rams now and not get to the quarterback. Now the Packers actually have a pass rush, which is good to see. Rodgers wasn't very sharp, which honestly, people are saying, oh, Aaron Rodgers is washed up. But let's just calm down a little bit here, okay? He didn't play in the preseason. It's a new scheme, a new coach, and you're going against one of the better defenses in the NFL. Like, okay, it was kind of, concerning maybe in the first quarter when they had negative yardage, but you knew he was going to open it up a little bit if the game went on, and he made enough plays and didn't make any mistakes. And the way his defense was playing, just kind of just needed to manage the game, really, for this game. And he threw a touchdown pass. And, I'm not Aaron Rodgers is the least of my concerns as a Green Bay fan. Obviously just more excited about how well the defense played. And hopefully they can stay healthy. And, we'll see what happens this weekend. Another huge division game against the Vikings coming up on Sunday. So you know, the way that the off season goes now, and with the way how teams don't play anybody in the preseason, I kind of feel like the NFL should not schedule division games like the first few weeks of the year, because these end up being huge games, and like you just get lots of sloppy play. And if I was the sports czar, I would not schedule NFL division games until week three, but that's just me. So yeah, the Vikings, they look pretty impressive. They only threw the ball 10 times, which was kind of odd, but they really didn't need to. They just kind of ran the ball down the Falcons' throat, who looked to be frauds once again. Big shock there. Their defense was pretty bad. Matt Ryan padded his stats at the end of the game, had over 300 yards, but really never had a chance to win. The Vikings, you know, Cousins are going to have to throw it more than 10 times at Lambeau this Sunday, that's for sure. So that'll be a good matchup. And yeah, that Bills-Jets game, just think about it. The Jets got four turnovers off the Bills, and they were only up the 16-0. A good team would have been up 30 points. The Jets were just awful. Their offense was terrible. You know, Adam Gase, he's going to be a disaster. Let's face it. You know, I just don't see it working out. And to lose like that in the first game, that's just brutal. I don't think the Bills are that good either, but at least, you know, at least they Josh Allen didn't quit, and they made the throws at the right time, and they got the comeback. But that's just a brutal loss for the Jets. I mean, if you're a Jets fan, I feel bad for you. That was a bad way to start the season. I took Carolina, and they really should have been up at halftime against the Rams. And, you know, the Rams were slow to start. Again, they didn't play any of their players in the preseason either. And then they kind of found it in the second half. Jared Goff, he wasn't very good, but he doesn't really play well on the road. That's his thing. Like, he's Superman at home. He doesn't play that well on the road, but their running game was really good. Cam didn't do that much. They were able to hold him in check. And, you know, McCaffrey went wild, but that was really, you know, they let him go wild because they didn't let Cam Newton beat them, and they kind of held on and won. So they were impressive. As were the Chiefs, they just kind of picked up right where they left off. You know, 40 points. Mahomes was excellent. Sammy Watkins, you know, almost 200 yards receiving. So same old for the Chiefs. Don't need to worry about them in terms of their offense. Their defense is still not very good. I mean, they made Gardner Minshew look like Aaron Rodgers out there. He was like, obviously Nick Foles got hurt in the first half, and then Minshew came in, and you're like, oh man, what's going to happen here? He still led them to 20 points and like 22 of 25 or something. So, you know, he had a really good game. We'll see if he can duplicate that going forward, but the Chiefs defense is not good at all. So, you know, we'll target them for like overs, and especially in like in fantasy scenarios too, whoever they're playing, I don't see how, you know, short of like the Dolphins or the, you know, some of the worst offenses in the league. I mean, teams are going to score on the Chiefs. The Chargers-Colts game was one that kind of annoyed me, especially because I had the Chargers for our picks here, and they were ahead 6 points going in to extend their lead, and Phillip Rivers throws an interception in 24-16. And, of course, the Colts come back down and score a touchdown with under a minute left and get a two-point conversion. You know, obviously, they ultimately lose in overtime, but that was a pick that I feel like I should have won. But in any event, that's what they call gambling. They did not miss Melvin Gordon. Austin Eckler had a fantastic game, you know, broke some long runs. You know, Brissett was okay, but really they're going to be based on their team is going to be relying on their running game and offensive line to really do some damage. With the way the division is shaken out, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. The Colts, you know, maybe 8-8 or 9-7 can win that division. And I certainly think they could probably reach that number, even with Brissett, because like I said, their team is much stronger now than when he had to play a couple of years ago. Let's see what else here. The Lions-Cardinals game, that was bizarre. I will say this. I don't think I will forcibly put money on Cliff Kingsbury all year, because he just does not belong in the NFL. Let's face it. And the fact that the Lions blew a 24-3 lead is embarrassing to that guy, seriously. Patricia should be ashamed to blow that game. And then it was weird. Like, I don't know if Kingsbury thought like overtime went to like the college rules, because there was a minute left in the game. He had 4th-and-7 on the Detroit 45, maybe 40, 45. And he punted, like basically punted for the tie. I think at that point you almost have to risk it and just say, okay, if we don't get it, we're probably going to lose. But, like, try to win the game there at that point. I just didn't like that decision. But, I mean, a tie is better than a loss, I guess. I mean, that's what he was thinking. I don't know. If I was coaching, I would have gone for the fourth down there. It's not like you're on your own 20. I mean, you're across midfield. The Giants were just hideous. I mean, come on. Their defense was so bad. And, you know, give credit to the Cowboys. They got rid of Scott Linehan and their new play caller, Kellen Moore, the old Boise State quarterback. I mean, they had some really nice looking plays, a nice game plan, and they just caught the Giants to pieces. And, I mean, the over-under on when Daniel Jones is starting has got to be like week 5 or 6. But, you know, the old Mongos in New York, they can't get rid of Eli Manning. They can't let go, but he really should be starting now. But I think maybe if the Giants are like 0-5 or 0-6, he's got to play. I mean, why else would you draft him? But and I guess the final game, the Bucs 49ers, that was just a disaster. Jameis Winston, this has got to be his last year in Tampa. He's just a turnover machine. And the Niners won because of 2 pick-sixes. Garoppolo wasn't very good either. I think we were fooled into thinking that he was a good quarterback. I mean, both teams were so sloppy. I don't think either team reached like 250 yards of offense. That it was just a brutal game. And then, yeah, Andy mentioned the Monday night games. I didn't get to see much of the Broncos-Raiders game at all. But, yeah, not surprised that Oakland had some kind of an emotional lift, per se, kind of after getting rid of Antonio Brown. And then the first game, that was really exciting, Houston and New Orleans. Drew Brees kind of took advantage of O'Brien's boneheaded decision to they only needed 10 yards to get to a field goal. And he's sending guys back to the goal line, and he's not throwing a Hail Mary there. I didn't know that. And then you had Booker McFarland when Drew Brees gets the ball. This game's not over, folks. No shit. I mean, come on. I can't deal with a year of Booger just by himself. It has nothing. It's just so bad. But, yeah, I would agree. It was a sloppy week, but, you know, the teams will get better. And I think the first couple of weeks last year were kind of the same thing. Just teams, they don't play it much in the preseason, and they don't really do, like, padded practices either. And it's just going to take a few games for these teams to get in sync and offenses to really start to gel. So by the end of the month, we'll forget that this kind of sloppy week even happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing I'd add to that is that I wonder if maybe they would eventually reduce the preseason so that you don't have as much of that. But I don't know. I mean, in other words, since you're not starting your guys anyway, like, why do you need 4 preseason games? That's kind of my thought on that. But I don't know. We'll think about that later. Would you sign up for that, John? Like, would you do a two game preseason just so you can figure out roster cuts?
Yeah, I agree. If they're not going to play the guys anyway, just do the 2 games. I agree. You know, just play your starters a little bit in one game and then just do the backups in the other. And, you know, I know the players aren't going to really go for the extended regular season, but as a fan, yeah, give me two more regular season games and get rid of the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of becoming that anyway, so I figure it wouldn't be much of a transition by then. So let's go to the picks, and let me get really go really quickly on mine so that we can get to the other fellas. So we'll start with the point spread that a lot of people are looking at, and it is the Dolphins getting 19 points against the Patriots at home. The Dolphins tend to be pretty sneaky against the Patriots, and they looked absolutely useless on Sunday when they lost, what was it, like 50 to 10 or something. It was some really crazy score in a blowout loss to Baltimore. So naturally, a lot of people are going to overreact to that. And the Patriots beating the Steelers by 30 points, same scenario. So I figure this is the byproduct of overcompensation. But having said that, it almost now, because so many people have talked about this, about taking the Dolphins, it almost feels like a trap bet now. So I'm going to fall into the trap here and take the point. So Dolphins plus 19, game number one. Game number two, this is going to be a popular one. Saints plus 3 at the Rams. The history of the Saints in recent years against the spread, really good. Andy talked about that last year. And the idea that you're going to take Drew Brees over Jared Goff, I feel like I feel a little more confident about that. And then the third factor that I think could play in New Orleans' favor is the revenge factor from last year's NFC Championship and the call that went against them and the fans moaning about it for months and months and months after the season. They want this game, and I think that the Saints will take it. So we'll go Saints plus 3 to go along with Dolphins plus 19 for NFL Week 2. Okay, so that brings us to Andy in Seattle. And Andy, we're ready for your picks. Andy? Do we have you, Andy? Hello?
Hello?
Yep.
Am I there?
Yep.
Fading out. Yeah, thanks, Dave. I don't really have, like, any great feelings about this week. But just for, I mean, we have to gamble on them and we have to pick two games. So here we go. I am going to play the role of clown here. And I'm going to take Buffalo on the road, giving a point and a half to the New York Giants. That is such a cesspool of a game. I don't really have any analysis on it, but I'm ready for the Eli Manning funeral. I think, Josh Allen, he's a raw quarterback, but he does make plays. And as we saw against Dallas, like, that Giant defense has the potential to get cut to ribbons by a Pee Wee League. So give me Buffalo giving a point and a half on the road against the Giants. And then game number two, I'm going to be a Seahawk homer / waving the 12th man flag, even though they're on the road. And I think they've shed the label of not being able to play at 10 a.m. games out here. That was basically when Holmgren was the coach. Ever since Pete Carroll's been here, they've actually had a pretty decent success against teams on the East playing at 10 a.m. time. And I'm going to take Seattle. You're getting 4 against a Steeler team that basically looked like they put on pads for the first time ever last week. So basically, this is their first week of practice for the Steelers, based on what you saw last Sunday night. The Seahawks didn't look good at all against Cincinnati. I think they definitely had under 200 yards of total offense, but I think they'll play a little better. I'm a big fan of this Metcalf guy that used to be on Ole Miss. I think he could be a potential weapon for Russell Wilson. And listen, that Steeler defense has a lot to be desired. Like I said, I think the Seahawk offense will bounce back a little bit. And obviously this year for the Steelers, I know the narrative going into the year, as Dave mentioned, is they're going to rise like a phoenix without some of these malcontent players. But the other side of that coin is they need to establish identity without these household names. And maybe this year could be a little struggle for them as they transition to a new identity, and they need, some of these other guys to step up and establish themselves. So, yeah, I'm going to take the Seahawks. So they could easily win this game outright, and then you're getting 4, so maybe they lose a close game by 3. So Seahawks getting 4 to go with the Buffalo Bills giving 1.5. Two road teams. Week 2, NFL.
All right. Thank you, Andy. Now let's go to John, and let's get your Week 2 NFL picks.
All right. Thanks, Dave. We'll start off here. I believe these two teams played 2 Super Bowls back in the day, the 49ers and Bengals. I think Collinsworth always mentions this on at least once a week on Sunday Night Football. The 49ers stole a Super Bowl away from him. That's in between him hating the Giants, of course. So I will go with the Bengals in this game, minus the 2 points. I was actually impressed with how they played in Seattle. I mean, no one expected anything from them. Dalton threw for over 400 yards. They had a 200-yard edge, like Andy mentioned. Honestly, still don't know how they lost that game. They lost 21-20, but they really played well. Maybe getting rid of Marvin Lewis and getting a new voice in there was a net positive so far. Zach Taylor is their new coach. He's from the Sean McVay coaching tree. It seems to be where all these teams are going these days. But, they were throwing the ball deep. John Ross made a few huge plays, and they look pretty good. So we're going to take that momentum from that game into this weekend when they're playing the Niners, who, like I said, they looked awful. And they only won because Jameis Winston was even worse than Jimmy Garoppolo. And it just it was, that was just such an ugly game, and Red Zone was showing a lot of it, and it was just brutal. And the Niners do have a good front seven, so I think the key to this game will be able to, will be if Cincinnati can protect Dalton, because Bosa and those other guys there are pretty good. So if they can do that, their second, the Niners secondary is not good, and Dalton will be able to throw down the field to Tyler Boyd and Ross, as I mentioned. So I just like how they played. I don't like the Niners and Garoppolo at the moment. And for that reason, I will take Cincinnati minus -2 for game number one. And then game number two, Andy was right when he said don't bet Joe Flacco on the road. Well, how about Joe Flacco at home getting 3 from the Bears? Well, do you want to bet Mitch Trubisky on the road? I don't. I mean, come on. There's two things in this game. Number one, obviously Mitch Trubisky on the road after that performance against the Packers. I mean, you can't take him here in this spot. Couple other things. Number one, the new Denver coach, Vic Fangio. Where was he the defensive coordinator for the last, 3 years? The Chicago Bears. So he knows exactly what Trubisky, his weak strengths and weaknesses, and what he's going to do. I think that's a huge edge in this game. Obviously, you could say the same thing. Well, the Bears know Fangio's defense. I just think that the edge goes to the defensive coordinator in this scenario. So I think that's huge, number one. Number two, Denver has a huge home field advantage week one and week two. I saw that they're a ridiculous 29-4 straight up over the past, I think, since 2001, I believe, or 2002. At home, weeks one and two, obviously because of the heat and the altitude combined, it's just a huge factor. If you go back the last couple of years, they always get off to a good start at home. They're always 2-0 or 3-0, and then things kind of go to the wayside after that. I mean, even Vance Joseph they were winning. I think they beat Seattle, I think, last year or the year before week one, and they're like, oh, this Denver team's going to be pretty good. Well, it didn't turn out to be that way, but I think the home field advantage and then Fangio having the edge on what Trubisky is going to do. We'll go Denver +3. They're not going to play as poorly as they did Monday night. And I think they'll get the outright win here. So Denver +3 and Cincinnati -2 for your NFL pick week number two.
Very, very interesting call there on the Broncos. I'll be honest with you. I would not disagree with that. So let me go to Ron's picks, cause this is going to involve the same game. So let me go. All right, let's begin with his game number one. Game number one for Ron in New Jersey is a checker and a checker with Dave's pick of Saints +3 at the Rams. So enough has been said about that game. We can talk about that after picks as well. Game number two, though, he's going head-to-head with John. He's going to take Mitch Trubisky on the road, giving the same 3 at the Broncos. So we are going head-to-head again. This week in NFL picks. So for Ron in New Jersey, it's Saints +3 and Bears -3 in NFL week 2. And that'll do it for picks tonight. Let's talk about some of the games coming up over the weekend. The big one, I think, is that Saints-Rams game. That's going to be good. But John mentioned Vikings and Packers. That's going to be great as well. You just hope it results in something better than a tie, because the last time there was a tie in that game at Lambeau Field, in game number one, the first meeting that they had in that season. Eagles at the Falcons, I think that's a good game. I'm not really so sure. And then a bit of a train wreck coming up on Monday night with the Browns and the Jets. So back to Andy. Any other games you want to talk about this coming weekend?
Yeah, that Falcon-Eagles game is going to – I'm going to have to gamble on it. And I feel like whatever side I take will end up being the wrong side, because – I feel like when I take the Eagles, it's going to be one of those, Mr. Mike's always, his theory is the only thing worse than being 0-1 in the league is being 0-2. And a team like the Falcons can't start 0-2. So they're basically, their back is up against the wall, but they're such a fraudulent team. But then if I do take Atlanta, I'm going to have nightmares of last year's Thursday night game. I think it was Eagles-Falcons, which was basically a deja vu of the playoff game from a couple of years ago when Matty Fraudulent Limp Ice couldn't get it into the end zone for a try. So I don't want to relive that nightmare again. So maybe it's better off just taking the Eagles for like a half a unit and just like, I don't want to relive that movie three times in a row. Or another option is just don't bet the game or take the over/under. But I do not want to touch that game. Unfortunately, I feel like I'm going to. But yeah, I mean, the average NFL fan who's just in it to watch for fantasy will probably be like, yeah, this is an entertaining game. But I have bad history with the Falcons. But I will definitely be into that train wreck on Monday between the Browns and the Jets. I will be rooting for the Jets. And, yeah, just like both these teams, like the Jets' second-half schedule is easy could be, but their first, like, six games is very hard. And then, yeah, you know, a lot of purists will – you know, be into the Redskin-Dallas game just, you know, for, like, the NFC East, like, old-school rivalry. But, you know, the Skins, they're supposed to be pretty lean this year. I know they surprised the Eagles for, you know, 20 minutes of the game. But, you know, I'm still not sure what we can expect out of Dallas this year because, you know, they played the Giants. So I think we have to kind of see how they play for like a quarter of the season before we know what we're getting with, you know, this year's Dallas team. But I also will definitely be in on that Viking Packer game. You know, obviously with lean Aaron Rodgers, plus, you know, Kirk Cousins on the road is always a little shaky. And yeah, like as John mentioned, their defense is much improved. And I think Rodgers is only going to, you know, get more crisp and establish a rhythm as you get later into the year. So there are some interesting games. Obviously, yeah, Rams, Saints, Ass Clown Special. So, yeah, we'll be we've got couch appointment TV watching all Sunday long. Absolutely.
Love it. All right. So, John, any other thoughts on this week's action?
No, I mean, we kind of covered most of the games in between the picks and just now. If the Saints-Rams, obviously it's going to be a huge revenge angle for the Saints at the NFC Championship game. But I don't know. Like I you know, obviously I like how Andy says, I have to make a bet on this game because it's true. You do have to make some wagers here. I'll probably go with the Rams in this game just because, like I said, Jared Goff is a completely different quarterback at home than he is on the road. And I just don't see the Saints winning this game in L.A. And just because of that reason alone, and I know that they have the whole revenge, but I think the Rams have a better offense and a better defense than the Saints, and I think they're going to win. You know, the Sunday night game is interesting. I agree that, like, whoever I take in this one, you can see the Eagles not showing up, but at the same time, if you take the Falcons, you can see the Eagles winning, like, by two touchdowns, like 38-24 or something. So, yeah, maybe the over is the bet for this game. I could see lots of points being put on the board. The Eagles secondary is not very good. I mean, you saw the highlights from the other day. Case Keenum was throwing like 50-yard bombs to that rookie from Ohio State, McLaurin, however you say his name, and over 400 yards passing. So if Matt Ice to Julio Jones can't get going in this game, you know, it's not going to happen this year because the Eagles secondary is ripe for the picking, but that should be an interesting game anyway. And then, of course, the Monday night debacle, Freddie Kitchens and Adam Gase matching with and Booger McFarland on the call. What a game that'll be. That'll be a train wreck. I don't know who I'll be taking with that game. I have no clue. I think I might just stay away from that shit show. Hopefully I'm up some units and don't have to be forced to put a wager on that. Let's see. Yeah, we kind of mentioned the other games. Lions and Chargers is kind of interesting. What's interesting to know, actually, about this week is, so you know, you have the interdivision games, the interconference games. So you have all four of the NFC West teams playing at the NFC North teams this week. So you have the 49ers at the Bengals,
You have the Seahawks at the Steelers. You have the Cardinals at the Ravens. And then you have the 49ers at the Bengals. So all four West teams are playing at the AFC North team. So we'll see how that kind of round robin shakes out and see if the West Coast teams can get a win coming east. So it's kind of odd how the NFL does the schedule, but I'm sure it's like all formulaic, and you know, they just, that's just an easy way for them to kind of do it. But I thought that was kind of cool to note.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can remember any division playing the entire other division on the same week like that. So that's definitely interesting. Whether they meant to do it or not, I think it's a pretty neat little schedule quirk. So that's about it. I mean, we got a short show tonight, so we'll just do final thoughts, if you even have any. So, Andy, I'll go to you first.
Not to funhouse our own program, but the one outlier there is the Rams and the Saints and the Browns and the Jets. But the other three were
Oh, yeah, the Rams, yes, you're right. Yeah, bad job on me. The other three are correct.
Yeah. Final thoughts. We alluded to this in the week one or the week zero program. The player of the year, it went to Rory instead of Koepka. So somewhere our friend Mike, also known as Panther, is probably raising up a storm. But yeah, I don't know what the – I know it's the players voted and – I don't know what the mechanics behind that, but I don't know. I would have given it to Brooksy, but sure enough, Mad Dog Russo on today's program was also against the decision, and right on cue, he's like, "I don't care about Canadian Opens. I care about the majors." So argument, and yeah, I don't know. I'm sure Rory would have voted for Koepka. That's just my opinion, though. But yeah, that's my final thought, and you know, getting ready for some more pigskin.
Yep, and on we go. John, final thoughts?
Yeah, as if Koepka needed any more motivation for next year's majors, but the fact that he just got snubbed for player of the year, I mean, you know, that's just going to push him over the edge and just make him even more like intense for next season. So good job by the players there. Yeah, it should be a fun weekend. We'll get it all started tomorrow night with Bucks and Panthers, some great Thursday night action. Interestingly, there's no college games this week. Usually they take the week off for the NFL week one, but no college picks again tomorrow night. So kind of interesting, but we'll certainly get into the mix with that on Friday, and should be a great weekend of games once again.
Would you lay the points in that game tomorrow, John, just out of curiosity?
Oh, yeah. I'll take Panthers -7 and under. I saw some 6.5 yesterday. I should have bet at the end. It's at 7 now, unfortunately. But 7.5 or 8, I don't know if I would. But definitely 7, I'll take the Panthers.
All right. Well, with that, I say goodnight, everybody. Thanks for coming on again, guys. Good show. And good luck to your picks.
All right. Thanks. Good night, everyone.
Dave. Thanks.
Good luck, fellas. Good night. That's it for everybody. That's it for me. That's it for our show. Good to hear from you guys again. Andy in Seattle, John in Connecticut, and I, Dave, in the city. Have a good night, everybody. Enjoy your games. Enjoy your picks. And good luck to all the wagers you do, whether they are these recommendations or others. We can find us on Twitter at DidCow. We're on the web at DidCow.com. On Apple Podcasts, look for Dave in the City Out West. I am Dave Medina once again. Have a good one. We'll see you next time.